The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge a glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
The most pun-worthy FA Cup quarter-final in living memory. Is it better to be a handy side or a useful one? Which sports do and don't deserve to have a figurative cathedral to play in? The most internationally eligible footballer of all time? Why one unwitting former goalkeeper will forever be the dictionary definition of a lapsing concentration? The best Richard Keys Monday blog for ages, and the moment his bee-in mask slipped for one poignant second. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 242 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. And today's adjudication panel comprised of David Walker. How's it going?
Very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How are things with Watford? Dare I ask? I just want to see one euphoric tweet from you on a Saturday evening, 6 p.m.
I know. Well, we couldn't beat Wigan, who were bottom of the league on Saturday. It was a dismal game. But every cloud, I met two Wigan fans on the train back into London after the game, and me and another member of the Athletic team here, who was also with me, ended up having a wonderful night in a pub near Euston with these two Wigan fans.
Oh, so it's like Bodo Glimt, the Bodo Glimt effect.
Yeah.
Working its way in a domestic front. Great to see. Well, I hope you had as much fun with me and indeed Nick Miller. Speaking of silver linings, how you doing?
Silver linings, is that good? I think that's good. I'll take it.
Yeah. Dave's the cloud, you're the silver lining.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, in fact, in which case I'll definitely take it.
Pleasure to have you. So much to get through on the adjudication panel today. Climaxing in so many ways with a triumphant Keys and Grey corner. Less grey, actually, increasingly more Keys than grey in this corner in 2023, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. Let's kick off the adjudication panel with this. Came from Bobbington Boob. Brighton 5, Grimsby Town 0, Dave. Already came pre-packed with puns. Didn't it? It was a very punny FA Cup tide, wasn't it?
Yeah. And
people were running with it quite freely beforehand.
Well, Grimsby are just, they are the most punny team around, aren't they? With all the fishermen stuff and the whole thing.
Maritime and fish-related puns are kind of a well-worn thing for kind of match summaries. But we've talked about before kind of the voiceover for goals roundups, but this is a different level entirely. This is ITV News recap on the game with Chris Scudder.
It was the day Grimsby and mascot Harry the Haddock took on a big fish from the Premier League. The small fry from the fourth tier hadn't got this far in the cup for 84 years. But it took only 5 minutes for the men from the East Coast to be caught in Brighton's net.
And rattled in on the rebound.
Dennis Undav scoring the opening goal. Mitoma let them off the hook for what should have been a second goal before half-time. But Brighton's seagulls were circling, and a moment of class from teenage striker Evan Ferguson reeled them in with that killer second.
Evan Ferguson, he's 18 years of age.
No disgrace for Grimsby, but they were all at sea again here, and the young Irishman helped himself to his second. The Premier League club went trawling for more goals and finished with five without reply.
And Brighton do have a fifth.
But this was Grimsby's day. They'd won down the coast at Premier League Southampton on this famous cup run. And despite a battering, Harry the Haddock could still hold his head high. Chris Scudder, ITV News.
Chris Scudder, Nick, is a well-established name on this sort of circuit. That's a professional's attempt at this sort of thing. You know, a couple of those puns could have been quite tired in sort of amateur hands, but he steered it through like a consummate pro.
Yeah, it didn't really feel like his heart was in all at sea. It felt like after the kind of various specifically fish-related ones, you thought, oh, I'm going to have to get All at Sea in here somewhere.
You have to have All at Sea in, don't you? It's an absolute
law. It'll have to be the one where with the open goal. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Just throw it in there.
All at Sea. Just the right amount of kind of dedication to the puns, and also kind of just a little sort of inherent chuckle to it, Dave. But not enough for it not to be kind of ITV newsworthy. You know, there's some standards there. You've got to keep it together.
That's the full house, really, I think. How many were you counting there? Was there six or seven?
Nine, I got to.
Nine.
I meant nine, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Battered was a great way to crown it with the ninth. The crowd were shouting, "We want 10, but it didn't quite happen. But thanks, Chris Scudder.
I mean, it's ITV news, right? So there'll be a broad audience watching that. Are there people watching that going, why is he making so many fish puns?
Well, I mean, surely coupled with the pictures of the people, you know, holding the inflatable fishes, you have to have a very limited knowledge of things not to join the dots there, surely. Yeah.
The most punnable FA Cup tie for a long, long time. Right, next up in the FA Cup, this came from Sam Huxley, Arthur Fain and James Woods. Here's Sheffield United's FA Cup hero Tommy Doyle showing some football linguistic wisdom beyond his years.
On loan from Manchester City, but you are now going to go into the Sheffield United history books. I mean, you're going to be a hero among the Sheffield United fans.
I said before I came here that I was going to give 100%, 110% sorry for the club, and you know that's what I'm trying to do. So, yeah, you know, if that puts me in that status, then that's amazing. But you know, I'm just happy to be playing here at this moment and giving everything for the club.
Dave, I don't think I've heard anyone ever correct themselves to make it the full 110 before. That's some serious self-awareness.
Yeah.
That's excellent stuff from such a young man.
Do you think he actually remembered? Oh no, I did say 110, didn't I? Or is he just sort of falling back to, that's not what I should say. I'm expected to say 110.
He's got to impress his loan club, his new fan base, Nick, by giving it the full 110, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the apology is, sorry, I'm not just, want to stress, I'm not just giving 100%.
Yeah.
110. Don't accuse me of shirking. Or like he's going to, he's afraid the coaches are going to hear the interview and go, oh, all right, okay, only 100%. I'm fine. Well, some of us are working here, but, you know, if you just want to give 100%, that's fine.
A subtle thing, but yeah, just generally wonderful to hear. And thanks for everyone who sent that in. It's time for For My Sins Corner. A favourite For My Sins Corner for a long time, simply for the name of the guy who sent it in. This is from Esteban Dominguez Boonface, who was listening to BBC Five Live World Football Phone-In, which I have never listened to before, Dave, but I understand it attracts some characters, you know, given that it's late night radio. There are some alternative voices that you get to hear on this, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, but hosted, of course, by Dotun Adebayo, who's done an MHD, Tim Vickery, regular guest on that as well. But it's classic sort of late night, overnight radio. It attracts the certain sort of person that's up listening to the radio at 3 a.m.
Exactly.
Talking about world football.
Maverick rogue characters they may be, they still stick to the script. This is Olga, a Reading fan, calling into the World Football Phone-In. You guys know the rules. She's going to say, For My Sins, at some point. I just want you to shout in there first.
Anyway, Olga, great to have you on the programme. You don't think losing 7-0 is that big a deal. How come?
Well, I have been a Reading supporter since 1946.
Wow.
And the first match I ever saw, Reading beat Crystal Palace 10-2. And I became smitten with football and have been a supporter of Reading all my life. For my sins.
Ah, no sin whatsoever. Oh my word.
It's just another classic example of how this game gets in your head. It was such a kind of straightforward thing. It wasn't going to be the first one, but it was inevitably going to be the second one.
She left it open.
She did.
There was a pause.
Yeah.
A perfect pause.
Yeah, it's an uncharacteristic pause. You don't often get the pause before For My Sins, because For My Sins is such a filler thing to say.
Yeah.
It almost doesn't need the build-up. It doesn't need the kind of pregnant pause, but there it was, Olga from Reading, absolutely catching you both out. With as Nick said, Dave, a very straightforward affair, but both of you struggling with that one.
I think one of the most earnest For My Sins things we've ever had, actually.
Yeah, very casually delivered, but lovely stuff. Well done, Olga. Now, question from Frank Elliott, Nick. So this may have been covered before, but he offers this scenario. An inverted left winger tries to curl one in at the far post, but it goes wide. And a co-commentator will say, you can see what he's trying to do there. every single time. Is this the ultimate example of you can see what he's trying to do there? So a, sort of a player trying to curl the ball in at a far post. Is that the thing where we're kind of encouraged, we're invited to guess what the mind frame was?
I would associate that more with like a through ball that hasn't quite come off.
Okay.
You know, the midfielder or whoever is trying to find the gap between a couple of central defenders and it's intercepted by either by a midfielder or something. Mm. So, yeah, that's what I would, rather than the curling shot, I think that's what I would most associate it with.
That makes more sense, Dave, a kind of a through ball, because that might need some expert intervention from a co-commentator to kind of figure out what was going on and tell it to us. Whereas a shot to the far post, I think we can all figure it out. Like, I think we know what he was aiming for at that situation, so... I don't know.
I think both examples are perfectly suitable for that bit of co-commentary. But I can sort of picture Glenn Hoddle doing this because he likes to get into the real technical details.
Student of the game, isn't he?
And I can see him talking. He's just tried to put a little bit of curl on it, but it's just not quite enough. Not quite wrapped his foot around the ball quite enough. But you can see what he's trying to do
there.
Yeah,
you can see what he's trying to do. Yeah, I like it. I like it as a bit of co-commentary. I mean, we all supposedly crave this insight. And I think it's a very good example of it. Getting into the player's head, telling us what they were doing and why. So, pure piece of co-commentary, if anything. Thanks, Frank Elliott. We also enjoyed this one from Jack Wang. And this had a sense of foreboding about it, actually, because he asked this before Leipzig got tonked 7-0 by Manchester City, Nick. He says, what constitutes a useful side? It's just been used on BT to describe RB Leipzig. It's a very kind of specific label describing someone as useful. And I think maybe this is the ideal scenario for it because it's a team from Europe, so there's some critical distance involved. And you're not entirely sure what you're trying to say about them, but useful will do the job. It's essentially, they offer some sort of threat, but I can't describe it because I don't know enough about them. I think useful is just about right.
Yeah, I would say that if a useful side can't contain too many players that you've heard of.
Yeah.
And I suspect that Leipzig have got maybe one or two, maybe one more like particularly famous player or player that a relatively casual observer might know who they are.
Okay.
They've got Werner, they've got Nkunku, they've got Gvardiol. So, I don't know. I would say Leipzig are a little bit too good to be useful.
That's fair. I think maybe more like a Europa League kind of thing.
I think it is, yeah. I'm not sure. Inherently, I don't think you can say a team in the sort of knockout stage of the Champions League are useful.
Okay, Dave, what's it better to be? Useful? Is it better to be a useful side or a handy side? Useful or handy, which is better? And the same could apply to a single player, of course. He's a useful little player. He's a handy little player. Which is better?
But when you're talking about it like if, as a player, I think that takes on a different connotation because then you're sort of, it's a little bit more literal. It's like saying that they will come in handy, they're
function.
Good to have around and they'll do you a job. Whereas, as you say, I think you were bang on with the description of a club. It's, they're quite useful. Oh, look at the Europa League last. There's some useful sides in that draw still.
Yeah, yes.
Your Leverkusen, yeah. You know, Atalanta. Useful
sides. You've got to say useful sides there. That's perfectly delivered. Yes. But yeah, being handy is better, isn't it? Because if I described a human being as handy in a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
He's useful in a fight, but he's handy in a fight. He would kill you. He'd literally kill you.
Yeah, and like a handy man. You don't call up a useful man. You want a handy man. Yeah.
Literally, Dave, right in his element here, and I'm allowing it. I'm allowing it to happen.
Useful Andy. It wasn't useful Andy on Changing Rooms, was it?
Well, it doesn't rhyme. For start,
no, that doesn't rhyme. Yeah. And no name rhymes with useful either. Right, speaking of names, this isn't quite Sven Botman in Frasier, and nothing ever will be. But let's do it anyway. This came from Amir Al-Hassan, who was watching a comedy I'd never heard of, My Wife and Kids, specifically Series 5, Episode 21.
Big news, you're not gonna believe this.
You better not be pregnant again.
No, Mama, look, I've got the most exciting news you've ever heard. Maybe the most exciting news anyone's ever heard.
Okay, well, what the hell is it?
Okay, I got a call from the ABC television network. Mm-hmm. One of their hashtag executives saw my comic strip and he wants to turn it into an animated TV show.
That's
fantastic.
Yeah, his name is Fernando Torres.
And he wants to meet with me this week.
I feel like it deserved a bigger build-up, Dave, and that's what it got. No one knew what was coming, and it just turned out to be Fernando Torres, which I guess is, I don't know, 6 out of 10 common, but still fun.
You said it's not as good as Sven Botman in Frasier, but they didn't actually say Sven Botman. No,
I don't
just
care
the way they
that.
Pronounced it.
Don't care.
It's that is actually Fernando Torres.
Yeah.
Word for
subtitles
word.
Subtitles confirmed it. No question. Yeah. I mean, it's still fun to hear footballers' names in the wild, Nick, no matter how common. I mean, how common a name do you think it would be before the effect wears off?
What do you mean, like Alan Smith or something?
Alan Smith. I think it would still be funny. One,
it's a two, shame that the dad, upon hearing the news, didn't go, oh, El Nino.
He's not been the same since Liverpool. No. Yeah. Anyway, thanks, Amir Al-Hassan. Yes, a worthy addition to the canon. Now, this is nonsense. Ed Yu writes in, and what he was doing at this event, I've got no idea, Nick. He says, I've just heard the compere at the Canary Wharf Squash Classic refer to it as this cathedral of squash. Surely something that's a temporary structure cannot be referred to as a cathedral. He's right on all counts here. Squash can't have a cathedral, can it?
Sorry, I'm stepping on literal Dave's toes here, but because you can have squash in a sort of temporary structure, you could literally put one in a cathedral, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the middle. But yeah, you can't. I mean, no, absolutely not. Because the only real permanent squash courts are just like at municipal leisure centres, and there's the, you know. Yeah. There's nothing cathedral. No, yeah. Nothing cathedrally about those things. They just kind of smell of stale sweat.
Dave, can you think of a less cathedrally sport than squash? I'm only making a small amount of judgment here. I just don't feel it's very cathedrally.
Tiddlywinks.
True. There are no tiddlywink specific arenas out there, are there? Always held, you know, used for other sports as well. So, yeah.
What about golf? Can you have a cathedral of golf? Because it's
good point.
There's no, no. I mean, you know, a lot, plenty of sports are outdoors, but golf is there's no structure around.
You've got to have a roof around a ceiling.
Yeah,
I mean, there are grandstands, but they don't enclose anything, do they?
No.
What they lack in fixtures and fittings, they certainly make up for in grandiose sort of tradition, like St Andrews and like Augusta.
Yeah,
but
what they sort they refer
of have, to they, as. They, I don't know if they have ever been described as the cathedral of golf, but they sort of, they do take on that mantle in a way, more so than a lot of things that are actually described as the cathedrals of X sport.
F1, yeah, you can't have a cathedral in F1.
No, that's awful. That's closer, but it's still awful. Absolutely awful, not having any of it. Next came from Adam Hartland, who was listening to Talk Sport Drive on Friday, and their guest was Blake Harrison, a.k.a. Neil from the Inbetweeners. And first up, Andy Goldstein asks him like a completely par for the course question before Jason Cundy follows it up in the most footballery way possible.
Do you see the boys that much?
In the same house where there's four bunk... Well, there's two
Wouldn't
bunk
that be
beds.
A great movie?
Two bunk beds in a room and yeah. We're just all there together all the time.
But do you see them at all?
Little bits here and there, but you know, we've got families, we've got other careers. It's just this one of those things you don't see each other as much as maybe you would like.
You said that you're surprised it's still going. It's of course on TV Gold. You can just flick through it casually. You can go and flick through it any time of the day, and it feels like Inbetweeners is always going to be there or thereabouts. Does it still surprise you when you flick through something and go, oh, there it is, or are you just used to that now?
Such a handy phrase, Nick, and it comes in handy. Maybe it does work for TV guides.
Amazing. I mean, there's such a, in hindsight, an obvious, it's a very obvious thing, but I genuinely didn't know what was coming there.
Handily, Adam Hartland didn't tell me what phrase I was looking for. I had to trawl through this clip, Dave, to find a For My Sins, thinking, where's this going to pop up? And that up came a there or thereabouts. Maybe there or thereabouts does work in the kind of old hierarchical system of linear television. I mean, you know, your BBC Ones, your Channel Fours, and then when you're down on, you know, UK Gold,
yeah,
you're not there or thereabouts anymore, are you?
Would there be a TV channel or and thereabouts be streaming? Or maybe there would be Dave, thereabouts is Dave plus one. I don't know.
Yeah, thereabouts is plus one, isn't it? Yes, yes. Yeah. Great stuff. Marco J was next up. Nick, this might be relevant to your interests. He says, is the Nottingham Forest versus Newcastle game the most 1994 fixture available in the current Premier League? Which other years have discernible fixtures? Manchester United versus Arsenal feels pretty 2004. Aston Villa versus Leeds is very 1993. Very much in the eye of the beholder, I figured, after I asked the listeners for this. It turns out it all became just one congealed mass of perception. But Forest versus Newcastle is very 1994, isn't it? It's very Ian Wone. I can't see it taking place in any other year.
really.
Yeah, it's very 94. I think was it that season that Forrest, no, it was a couple of seasons after that, Forrest partly scuppered Newcastle's title run.
Yeah.
I did see this, and I had to think about a few. I mean, Liverpool-Manchester City is 2019, I think.
Okay.
Maybe 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very much heyday, yeah.
Norwich v Everton is quite 1993, I think.
Yeah.
Well, Norwich, of course, not in the current Premier League.
Yeah, I know. Some people bending the rules here, Dave. Tim says Villa versus Norwich is very 92-93, which is also true. I mean, Norwich are essentially a very 1993 club. There's no escaping that. Let's sift through the rest of these diminishing returns. Jonas Spildrejordet says Everton Spurs, which has been played literally every single year for 45 years, still feels very 94-95 to me. Do you think there's just a general 90s preoccupation with most of our listeners? Is that where we're going here? I fear.
Basically, yeah. I think that is the issue. Everton Spurs, the FA Cup semi-final?
Yeah.
95?
Yeah, I don't like it when individual games stick in people's heads.
Quarter-final, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nick, what year do you think Cameron Christie prescribed to Middlesbrough versus Leicester?
Well, again, this falls into the single game category because it's the 97 League Cup final.
Yeah. People really showing their working here. Newcastle West Ham, Dave. Isaac says it's very 2005-2006, which I agree with, as is Bolton Portsmouth, says Rory. Yeah, can't argue with any of these. Leicester Bournemouth oozes 2017, says JB Nick. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, I can't put a... I mean, Leicester Bournemouth is a fairly... I can't ascribe anything to Leicester Bournemouth, really.
No.
Nothing sticks in my mind about that at all. Despite knowing that they have been in the same division in multiple seasons, and if you told me that Leicester have never played Bournemouth, I would believe you.
Yeah, the sort of ships passing in the night phenomenon. Yeah, maybe this doesn't quite land, Dave, this attempt at approximating things, and that's fine, because when they do, they really do land, and I'm fine with this. It's good to experiment.
Yeah, I think the recent ones, they haven't had enough time to sort of percolate in your mind's eye, have they? In the same way as some of the older ones.
Let this be a lesson to listeners. Don't let one event cloud your judgment when it comes to approximating things across 30 years of football. Don't let it happen. Don't let it happen.
Oh, look at that! That is wonderful!
Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Welcome back to the Adjudication Panel. Right, let's kick things off in the second half with Matt Phillips. Dave, he says Paul Merson has just declared on Soccer Saturday that Van Dijk needs to get back to being a Rolls-Royce. Is it a quality that can be lost and gained? Never really considered this before. Is it a skin you can shed and then grow again? Can you cease being a Rolls-Royce? I don't think so.
Yeah, but if you are playing really badly...
You're still a Rolls-Royce. You never lose it. I think once you become a Rolls-Royce, it never goes away.
You're just not displaying those qualities, but you still have them.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, you don't become a bad player overnight sort of situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
He might be going through a bad run of form, but he is still objectively a Rolls-Royce of a defender.
Yeah. But then, you know, one of the things I really lobby for as being a core criterion of being a Rolls-Royce, Nick, is the kind of elegance of movement, smoothness over the ground, allied with power and speed. Now, you can lose some or all of those things, so you could cease being a Rolls-Royce, I guess, fundamentally. Maybe you can.
Maybe getting too deep into the weeds here, but if you cease to be a Rolls-Royce, do you then become like a slightly inferior kind of car?
Like a Lexus.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's still massive. Still can still move. Still fundamentally high calibre, but not quite a Rolls Lexus, perhaps. Yeah. Yeah, okay, fair enough. Well, I'm on board with it. Right. Now, Nick, if I said the phrase international tug of war to you, what does it mean?
It means a player who's qualified for a number of different nations. Your Jack Grealish's, your Adnan Januzaj's. Various competing countries are trying to persuade that player to play for them.
Damn right, spot on. I'm always fascinated by players who have 3, 4, 5 countries bidding for their allegiance, you know, through some sort of grandmothery kind of way. But this blew my mind. This blew my mind. I don't believe it. I'm qualified for Northern Ireland. This blew my mind. It came from Dompu Yi. It says he may have found the peak national team eligibility. And he pointed me in the direction of Mechelen right back, Sandy Walsh. Get a load of this. This is the personal life section of Sandy Walsh's Wikipedia page. Walsh was born in Belgium to an English-born father of Irish descent who came from a Somali South African family
and a Swiss-born, Dutch-raised mother of Indonesian descent. He is therefore eligible for either Belgium, England, Ireland, Switzerland, Netherlands, Indonesia, South Africa, or Somalia. On 17th of November 2022, Walsh officially acquired Indonesian citizenship. Good lads! Fair play!
Wow.
Go for the easy one, I guess. 8 countries, Dave. That's astonishing.
Yeah, and I'm just reading it back because, I mean, there's no necessarily rhyme or reason as to why anyone should prefer to play. Everyone will have their own reasons for choosing whichever option they choose, and that's all fine. But, like, born in Belgium, that's tick number one. But then it doesn't say how long he stayed in Belgium, whether he would feel Belgian, I'm not sure. English-born father of Irish descent, Somali South African family, and a Swiss-born Dutch-raised mother of Indonesian descent. But then he has got Indonesian citizenship. Fascinating to see where he's gonna end up.
Yeah,
I mean, you could cross England off, surely, because he's just not. We've got a lot of right backs. I don't think he's going to get in the squad.
I love how he might. I mean, 28 now. I should add, it's not like he's an up-and-coming youngster. I love the idea that he factors that in. Well, right, quite a few players ahead of me in that position.
Yeah, I'm not going to get ahead of Reece James. I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold can't get in the squad. So what chances have I got?
Absolutely astonishing. But I can reveal he's played for the Netherlands from under-15s to under-20s.
Well, there you go.
But it sounds like. He was called up by Indonesia in November 2022, but hasn't played for them yet. So clearly a bit indecisive, and rightly so, with 8 countries knocking at his door. Must be quite unnerving, really. Now, here's a rabbit hole and a half, hot on the heels of the esteemed Football Clichés column digging into someone's generic football birthday card and finding out that the player in question was indeed Javier Chicharito Hernandez, and some Chilean defender whose name I've already forgotten. This is another level entirely. This came from an email from Chris McRae. He says, "Dear Adam, doing a crossword, and I was Googling alternative meanings of nap. Is that cheating in a crossword, using Google?"
Yeah. Feels like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's a mark against you. Anyway, this is what came up on Google for nap. Find someone off guard and unprepared to respond. And this was a little supporting quote that went with the definition. The goalkeeper was caught napping by a shot from Carpenter. Chris McRae asks, who the hell was/is Carpenter and who was the napping goalkeeper? And I thought, well, how am I supposed to... I mean, where would you start with this, Dave? Where would you begin to research this?
And what? So you're suggesting that this is just not just a random word? They've taken this... Is this linked from somewhere?
Yeah, it has to be. It'll be unethical just to make it up. That's against the spirit of a dictionary, surely.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of a single footballer called Carpenter.
Well, so I consulted a list of professional footballers since 1880-something, and there were only a handful of Carpenters, one of which was a goalkeeper, so we can rule him out, because Carpenter was the one shooting. And there were two others, one who played for Torquay for one season in 1985-86, so I ruled him out just for the law of averages. It can't have been him. So there was a guy called Richard Carpenter who played for Brighton, scored about 20 goals for them, so it could have been him. But I thought, well, how on earth am I going to round it down to one shot in one match? And we don't even know if the crucial thing here, Nick, is that the goalkeeper being caught napping by a shot from Carpenter doesn't even mean that that shot went in. It doesn't imply goal straight away, does it?
Could have been saved by a goal line clearance.
Exactly.
The shot could have sailed over the bar.
Yeah, more context required. So, what can I do? So I got into contact with the Oxford English Dictionary, a guy called Craig Leyland, one of the editors at the OED, and he had a little dig round for me. And he tells me that the line in question is from a match report from the Alton Herald in 1992, a game between Alton FC, the Brewers, and Fleetlands FC. The goalkeeper is one Barry Woodger of Alton.
Wow.
Carpenter's first name isn't in the match report. Let me read out the line in question. It happened when keeper Barry Woodger was caught napping by a cross-come shot from Carpenter. He managed to push it away one-handed, only for Mark Wallace to pounce and give the visitors the lead on 20 minutes. So, there we are. So, I mean, above all, I mean, great detective work from me, Nick, but above all, imagine being the ex-goalkeeper, presumably, now essentially synonymous with being caught napping.
Can I suggest that you're maybe overestimating the reach of this, that this would have a kind of significant impact on his life? I don't know.
You're suggesting he might not know that he's the goalkeeper cited in the definition for nap?
Possibly, yes, possibly. Although he might know now, so, you know.
Well, he will know once I've contacted him on LinkedIn. I found him, Dave. He looks like the right sort of age. He lives in the reasonably similar area to where he used to play football, so I might have the guy. We'll get him on the pod, do an MHD.
I like it because it's almost a real life example of that thing where people go, well, this would have to be used in a negative sense. Like his manager, you were caught napping again. If I got the dictionary and looked at caught napping, you'd be there.
As much as I love that scenario, there is no way that anybody says caught napping out loud. Surely. It's a very much text-only thing, isn't it? But I love the idea of a manager saying, you were caught napping there. Caught napping. Silly phrase, really. Barry Woodger, not a member of the Wide Awake Club. It seems. But yeah, there you go. Honestly, I should work for MI6 or something. If MI6's job was simply to email people who know the answer and get them to email it back. Anyway. Right, anyway, after all that, it's time for a stellar Keys and Grey corner. Sunday. Right, we begin with yet again Keyes' conveniently scheduled blog post on a Monday morning, out fresh, just in time for us to absorb it before we record, Dave. It is a classic, an absolute classic. There isn't a... It's like a great album. There isn't a weak point in it. That it's all great.
All killer, no filler.
I've crunched the numbers on this column, Nick, and having seen that he immediately launched into his bete noir, Mike Riley. He mentions Mike Riley's name once every 169.7 words. I don't reckon Mike Riley's mum is obsessed with Mike Riley as much as Richard Keys is. Give this as a man who doesn't even have that job anymore, and he's still banging on about him.
It looks like worse ratio than I was expecting. I mean, I don't know whether there's quite a concentration of Riley at certain various points in this blog. So
it's a 1,200 word blog.
In the first paragraph as well, as you say, for someone who isn't responsible for anything that's happened this weekend,
he asserts that Mike Riley is still, and I quote, hanging about the PGMOL.
Just won't leave. He is like Brent in The Office with his dog. And you can kind of get it, because we don't talk about this enough, Dave. You talk about how, you know, players find it so difficult when they retire to go and find do something else and they can't switch off from the routine that they had. And no one mentions this about Premier League referees. What are they going to go and do?
Well,
no wonder he's still hanging around.
They're just going ref on a Sunday.
That's true. They don't want to drop down level. They don't want to drop down the levels, do they? Same as players don't.
But they miss the day-to-day buzz. Yeah. So, yeah.
The VAR room, the bunker. One thing this blog is kind of underrated as is it's basically a rival to Dermot Gallagher's Ref Watch on Sky Sports News. He covers every incident with as much journalistic rigour as the next. Now, I was trying to skim read it, Dave, to try and work out his intricate web of referees he rates or hates. It was really hard to find all these elite. I might put up a little pinboard in my living room and sort of get strings going from one referee and find out which one is at the core of this movement of, you know, suspicion and intrigue. But the whole thing's fascinating. He really cares about this stuff. He cares about right and wrong, Dave.
I think he hates them all, doesn't he? Pretty much.
Oh, there are some he rates, it would appear. I mean, he praised Chris Kavanagh for the way he handled Fulham pressing the self-destruct button at Old Trafford, and rightly so. So he gives out credit where it's due, but in the middle of all of this, in the middle of his discussion of the maelstrom of Old Trafford, which is the official name I'm giving it, Nick, he wrote this. Mitrovic should be banned for some time for his ridiculous attack on the ref. What was going through his mind? The way United were playing, I would have fancied Fulham to beat them with 10 anyway. Sending Willian off only evened things up. United only had 10 on. You can't count Weghorst.
That is confirmation that if we even needed it, that Weghorst is his... He's moved on from Arteta now.
Yeah.
He knows he can't... There's nothing left to say about Arteta in the technical area. Weghorst is the new man in his crosshairs.
Amazing. He will not let things go. Everything gets good 3 to 4 weeks of sort of rinsing, doesn't it, Nick, before he moves on?
Do we think that the Bournemouth celebrations finally killed off is kind of the Arteta thing?
You think, maybe. Yeah,
fair enough, that was a moment of pure joy and you can't begrudge them that. So back to Vout.
Interesting word that you use there. He can't begrudge them that, because the next item in Keys and Grey Corner is Richard Keys on Arsenal. This is him on Arsenal's European exit in midweek, which it basically starts off as grudging praise and then just gets more grudging from there.
I think it was a glorious meter failure.
Yeah, but it wasn't a failure. They got beaten penalties.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying. It was a glorious failure. And if I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm delighted. And by the way, if they win the title, they deserve to win the title. Mm. No one's put it down.
No.
Just because City are scoring goals and making a chase of it. Arsenal win this, they deserve to win it. And Lady Luck has smiled on them. But you force luck.
Yeah, you do. Make your own.
Yeah, and I think this group deserve everything and more that's coming. So good luck to them.
How did you manage to make that sound like a threat? To them. They deserve everything that's coming to them. Is that good, Richard? I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's a sinister edge to it, but I don't think I've ever heard good luck to them for a team essentially not running away with the title, but looking very, very set for it.
You obviously can't see this on the pod, but he when he said good luck to them there, he just turned and looked at the camera with a withering look.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing there.
Yeah. You crack on, lads. Yeah, you crack on. Look forward to the celebrations. Finally, this came from Greg Thomas, this week's handy person to have around who watches Be In from start to finish on a weekend. Nothing more to say about this, really, than a lovely Freudian slip from Richard Keys.
For our viewers in the Middle East and North Africa, that is available now on Sky Sports 2. Be In Sports 2. Can hardly read it.
Oh, it's sad, isn't it, a bit, after all this time?
And it would have been back in those days, was it Sky Sports 1 and Sky Sports 2? I think it would have been, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Before they changed it all.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like saying the name of another woman, Nick.
He's over it, though. He's clearly happy where he is.
Yeah. There's a hankering going on there. A hankering indeed. Anyway, thanks to you, David Walker, for a stellar adjudication panel appearance.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshout. I mean, oh, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Pleasure
come
to have
on.
You.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. See you later.
The Athletic.